Hi, I'm Alan Yonan, Assistant Business Editor with the Honolulu Advertiser. Today our guest is Lisa Gibson, CEO of the Hawaii Science and Technology Council. Okay, Lisa.
Yes.
Let's start off with a little background on the council. How long has it been around and what is its mission?
Hawaii Science and Technology Council has been around for, it was actually created on January 6th, when our boards came together. We merged with the Hawaii Technology Trade Association. We created first our charitable entity, which is the Hawaii Science and Technology Institute, and then we followed up with the creation of the Hawaii Science and Technology Council. And the mission of these two sister organizations is to accelerate the growth of Hawaii's science and technology economy.
Okay. And how many members do you have, and what's the growth like?
It's funny you ask that. Because we're new and we're a startup, I think we're at about 70 or 80, but we just last week did kind of our first membership outreach, because we've been working hard on creating these governance infrastructures. And then, of course, we've been working hard at the legislature, so we just made it through the ledge. Got these, the governance clarified with these two organizations, and we're just now hitting the ground running on membership. But we hope to be at 200 by the end of the year, 200 members. And as I say, I think we're up to about 70. I can confirm that before you leave.
Now, would these all be companies that are in the tech or science field, or do you have members that aren't actually?
It's a combination of some individuals, folks who are interested. Companies, companies like Hawaii Biotech or Cellular Bioengineering or Novasol, science and technology companies. But also we have members who are what are called affiliates, whether that be law firms or banks or venture capital companies. Those are the companies that service industry.
Okay.
Another big category is temporary agencies, companies involved in employment, like ADEPA, for example, or I'm having a senior moment here.
They help supply manpower to
exactly,
the companies.
Those kinds of companies.
Okay. It seems like every state would like to attract high technology companies, which have a reputation for good paying jobs and being in a relatively clean type of industry. What does Hawaii do compared with other states to try to recruit these kinds of companies?
Well, let's step back a minute.
Okay.
Actually, the Economic Development Board are very much involved in the recruitment of companies, but we're still kind of in the process in this state of getting organized so that we can define ourselves, so that we know what our strengths are. And so one of the big projects of the Science and Technology Council is to create a directory of industry so that and have the capacity to show in that directory which various industries these companies are involved in. And the trick is it's got to be a grid, because you can have one company, just take Oceanit for example. They are a life sciences company, they're a medical device company, they're an aerospace company, and they're a marine science company.
The overlap there.
Right. So what gives a community strength when you're developing science and technology is to understand what your sectors are and be able to define the convergences. When you have convergences, you're able to leverage your assets in lots of different ways. So a big deliverable for us this year is the creation of this industry directory. Not just a company directory, but an industry directory, because Hawaii has a lot of critical mass in research. So, for example, we might have, within the university, several centers of excellence. We might have the U.S. Weather Bureau here has the largest Weather Bureau office in the United States. It's a significant asset. I mean, so research is a area where we have critical mass, where we need to work and partner with those folks to end up taking that intellectual property, spinning it off, and growing more companies.
Now, before the formation of the Hawaii Science and Technology Council, you were talking about the two entities that came
right
together.
What was the history?
Well, that and also was there not enough focus? Were these two organizations
actually
not on the same page?
HTTA, White Technology Trade Association, started a long time ago to form an industry association. And subsequent, and they ended up very much focused on policy, Act 221. This is Ann Chung. She did a great job at that. Subsequently, I was involved with the creation of something called the Hawaii Life Sciences Council. And the focus of that was just in the life sciences sector. Ann and I started working together, and we realized there wasn't enough critical mass across all these industries to justify separate industry associations. So we came together. I am the president, and Ann is the vice president for government and community relations. I think that's your title. So it makes a lot of sense because A, these sectors are converging, B, there's not enough critical mass, and C, the fundamentals that we need cut across all the sectors, capital formation, workforce development, development of specialty facilities and infrastructure. Those cut across all the science and tech sectors. Now, there are unique requirements within each sector. So, for example, in life sciences, for life sciences companies, a unique issue might be the importation of microorganisms. So they're going to have a lot of issues that cut across all the sectors, and then they'll have their own unique issues. And it's our job to kind of bundle that together. It's a big job into an agenda, and to build upon and partner with a lot of other organizations that are doing similar work. We need to fill in the gaps.
Okay. So this, if somebody had to want to come to a contact point in the industry, you've got one rather than two, and I guess more
Correct.
Visibility and
well,
focus.
So here's a great example. Aquaculture has its own small industry association. We're not going to replicate what the aquaculture folks do, but it's a stronger voice. It's a broader voice for science and technology. We'll work with them to find out what their issues are, and we can help each other. It's so important to take this sector and grow it for the quality jobs, the improvement in health care outcomes, the solutions for our environment. All of those things are consistent with what we need to do to sustain this place.
And you mentioned jobs, and I guess from a public policy standpoint, you go to the legislature, you want to be able to say that we're helping, you know, the working person, helping elevate their standard of living and so forth. How many tech jobs are there? Is there a good estimate in Hawaii?
I have to, before you leave, I'll look up on the
okay.
Enterprise Honolulu has that information. But I think the statistic is that of the state's gross product, 70% of the gross product of the state is produced by 5% of the workforce. And that 5% of the state gross product, that 70% comes out of science and technology, innovation industries. So what that demonstrates to you is the salary base is very high.
Right.
And the other really important part of science and technology that's so tied to the public schools here is that, and we know this from looking at best practices in other communities. So let's say you're Boston, and I know this because I've been looking at their site. They have an industry association that literally shows the org charts for a typical, in this case, biotech company. So when you're in a biotech company, you have a whole division called quality assurance, how you deal with the FDA, you know, rules and regulations. What you find there is a career pathway that begins with somebody who can get a degree, a specialty diploma from a community college, but then there's a career pathway that goes all the way up to the vice president for quality assurance, which is a very high-paying job. So it's not just about the high-paying jobs. It's about creating opportunities. There's no reason that a young person starting off at a entry-level community college position couldn't say, I want to go get back and get my PhD in or get a degree in this, and so have the opportunity to make more money within an industry that's clean and helps people.
It must help be helpful in recruiting or to attract people to be able to offer them to be able to just say what you just said.
Yeah, well, we're not believe me, Boston's been at this for 25 years. We're just, it's a great model for us to look at, as is Biocom in San Diego. These are just biotech industry associations, Biocom in San Diego or Bay Bio in San Francisco. Those are very mature regions. And often in those regions, you're going to see separate industry associations for tech and for biotech. But in Hawaii, as I say, Ocean, it's a great example. There's a gigantic convergence. And the other convergence that's happening is in information technology. When it converges with biotech, you've got bioinformatics. And you know, that's the application of IT in life sciences.
I was going to say, the obvious geographic isolation of Hawaii, is that an impediment to attracting growing the industry here or attracting companies?
I don't think so. People work 24/7 globally, time zone. It's all the standard advantages that you've heard. We're close to Asia. We're a great place to bring people together. I think the bigger barriers are the same that they are in San Francisco and other regions, the cost of housing, the quality of education. People want to live here. This is a nice place. But those are the issues that we long-term need to deal. We've got the science. We've got the talent. Those are the big challenges.
How about the kind of support the industry gets from the legislature? How would you sort of characterize that? And I know that one of the things they passed this most recent session was a $100 million innovation special fund. Will that have any kind of impact?
Actually, it didn't pass.
Oh, it didn't pass.
At the last minute, so that was disappointing. On the other hand, in the past, they've created bills like Act 221. I mean, we'll get it. We'll keep working on it. The legislature, I think, is very cognizant of the importance of diversifying the economy. I think there's a lot of support there. They are they voted in the support for the Cancer Research Center, which is very important. Things like the Cancer Research Center, the Regional Biosafety Lab, the medical school, and the second part of the medical school, combined with Kamehameha School's proposed research building in Kaka'ako, if we get all of that, we'll have 1.4 million square feet of scientific space, infrastructure. That puts us in the ballgame. Then we're really playing. To get back to the legislature, they voted in the cigarette tax to provide operating money for the Cancer Research Center, which is very important. And in the long run, that will come back in spades to the state.
Okay. What would be some of the, you mentioned some of the companies, but some of the examples of biotech or technology companies that have really grown quickly and are sort of the hope for the future?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. Some of them, I have to tell you, are so technical, I'm not sure I can even communicate what they do. But we have a member company called Arkanoetics. They're growing quickly. I believe it's a health care. Oh, gosh, let me see if I can even articulate what they do. I should know how to say this, but I don't think I'll try. But they're IT, and they do a lot of brain imaging and things like that. There's a wonderful little company here that's called KytoPure. They're taking shrimp shells, getting the chitin out of it to supply a company on the mainland that has a patch. You know, shrimp shells are hard. Mm-hmm. It's in every soldier's pack in the battlefield. You slap that on if you've got a deep wound or a partial amputation on the battlefield. That patch will stop your bleeding. And this is a little company because our shrimp is so pure here. Other places in the world, the chitin isn't pure. So that's a company that's happening here. My goodness, we've got Navitec, that's a marine shipbuilder. Their technologies are phenomenal. We've got, as I said, Oceanet, we've got Hawaii Biotech, we've got the spin-out from that called Cardex Pharmaceuticals. We've got cellular bioengineering. Hank Wu is using regenerative medicine to create, this is amazing, corneas. It's amazing. These are all things that are happening here. Tissue genesis has got a medical device, and again, I'm a disclaimer for not articulating this perfectly, but which will create human tissue right in the operating room based on regenerative medicine. I mean, those are things happening right here in Hawaii.
Hoku Scientific.
Hoku Scientific Energy.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of energy companies. Clear Fuels. I mean, all those are the sectors. Let me see if I can run through them. This will be a little test. Ocean Sciences, Astronomy and Aerospace, Diversified Ag. Because under Diversified Ag, why it might not be all ag guys, you've got, of course, your seed corn industry, you've got aquaculture, you've got floriculture, those kinds of things that employ biotech, or companies like Kona Bay Marine that's doing exporting of baby shrimp. It's a significant export company. Then we've got information and communications technologies. We've got the life sciences, which encompasses several subsectors, and then, of course, defense and dual use. I think I got all the sectors.
Okay. Now,
pretty broad.
On the controversial side of technology, there's been a lot written about the proposal to bring a research center to the UH that would be funded by the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the you know, the critics are very passionate in their argument.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, first of all, the Hawaii Science and Technology Council testified with strong support for bringing the UARC here. I think there's some misunderstandings about how these, you know, these military monies are being used for basic research, and that's critical to grow this state. And the truth is, the science that's being funded up there is basic research, and the solutions for the world, for the Earth, and for all of humanity are going to come out of science and technology. And so it's critical that the university and the professors there get the funding that they need.
Can you talk a little bit about the UH Angels Investor Group and what do they do and what kind of impact has it had on our tech
sector? Rob Robinson's on our board and he's the convener of the UH Angels, and I'm going to defer that question to him.
Okay. Now, a little bit about yourself. As you pointed out earlier, you were a history major in college and you've now in a much different type of career. How did you get involved in economic development?
Well, first of all, history is way more interesting than fiction because it's kind of impossible. I'm still I read a lot. So I guess I also come from the Midwest, which is, you know, there's a lot of democracy happening there. You got a problem in Milwaukee, you call a town meeting, and it's up to the people to fix that problem. So I got involved in economic development when, in 1990, the economy collapsed. And everybody kept saying, well, it's going to get better next year. It's going to get better next year. And I watched friends leave, companies, people go bankrupt, and it wasn't going to get better. And so I became involved because I wasn't going to leave. I'm married to somebody from here. And he said, honey, I'm on the last boat. So I said, okay, I can either just get upset or I can try and get involved.
What were you doing at the time?
What was I doing at the time?
1990.
That's, we were living in Kamauaua on the Big Island for 2 years. I was involved in fund development. I had come off of a job at Hawaii Public Radio. So I've been involved in nonprofits. And of course, fundraising doesn't happen unless you've got strong leadership. Before there's money, there's leadership. And the best missions, the best organizations have clarity, urgency, and boldness. Those are the things that cause an organization to succeed. And if you've got that supported by strong leadership, a community can do anything it wants. So I didn't know I went to SOP University, seat of my pants. Everything I've learned about economic development, I have learned by talking to people, getting on the phone. I call any organization in this country and say, you don't know me. I'm from Hawaii. Can you tell me what you do and why it works? And I've had a magnificent board of directors, both at the Oahu Economic Development Board, which we transitioned into Enterprise Honolulu, where I was their chief operating officer. I wrote their business plan and was involved in the search to bring Mike Fitzgerald here. So it's all based on leadership. It was a great board there. I left Enterprise Honolulu, spun this, or, you know, started the Life Sciences Council, started building the board there, and then merged with Ann, and we've really got a fabulous board. Maybe I didn't answer your question.
No, that. But just getting back to the leadership thing, you didn't go to business school and you didn't take classes in management.
No.
So the things that you've learned were through observation along the way. You must have seen certain leadership styles or characteristics, and you said, "Aha, that works." What kinds of things caught your eye?
I think the trick is that when you're fundraising, if you're in a major capital campaign, it's got to be driven by leadership, which is credibility, integrity, willing to support. You know, willing to support with your own money. I mean, that's what leadership is all about, and that's what's required to create new civic infrastructures for the new economy. So I'm really thrilled with our board of directors.
Okay.
And there's so many people interested in this. This train has left the station, and it's not just this organization. There are lots of organizations. So I think, you know, the collaborations need to be worked out, who's doing what, but I don't think anybody's going to stop this right now.
So the sort of the vision of technology becoming a larger part of the economy here, despite our geographic isolation, you're hopeful for the future.
Sure. And so if you understand that the role of the industry association is to create that single voice. So if I were able to give to you the directory of industry in one document, saying, here's how many companies there are, here are the sectors that they are, I could paint a picture for you. We're getting organized.
How about, the economy's doing really well, unemployment's very low, the job market's really tight, and I guess the universities here can only produce so many graduates in these fields of expertise. Do you see that in the industry of like a difficulty attracting or hiring?
Workforce is a huge issue. It's a huge issue for the short-term recruitment, for the medium-term creating internships and mentorships, and then long-term aligning K through 12 DOE to produce the kind of kids that we're going to need in the future. Those are kind of the short, medium, and long-term goals. It's complicated. Workforce is complicated. But the consequences of not growing, not diversifying your economy are unacceptable. The issue isn't that we have low unemployment. The issue is that we don't have enough living wage jobs here. So of course, the short-term issue isn't that people are unemployed here. Short-term requirement is that we've got to bring kids back. So to address short-term workforce needs is a recruitment issue. Medium term and long term, we've got to grow those kids on our own.